Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
This is not a negotiation. I'm running this team because the Reinsdorfs want me to, and I'm going to run it that I think is best.
And your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
I think your play is embarrassing. The pro player thing, this is basketball.
Follow Locked On Bulls on social media. On Twitter, at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Pat. And on Facebook, at Facebook.com/LockedOnChiBulls.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, streaming live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley. Along with me is Matt Peck. Follow us on Twitter, at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. On Instagram, at Locked On Bulls. On Facebook, Facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line at 331-979-1369. Drop us all of your texts, your voicemails, whenever you're listening to the show, wherever you're listening to the show. 331-979-1369 is the place to do that. Matt, what's going on? Happy Friday to you on the West Coast once again for what is a mini road trip, I guess I would say. The last of the season for the Bulls, the last time the Bulls went on a West Coast road trip, well, we don't have to bring that back up again because we know how that went. But nonetheless, let's hope this goes a little bit better than last time. How you doing, Clippers tonight? Are you excited? I know it's going to be a late night for you and the Bulls Outsiders crew over at NBC Sports Chicago.
Yeah, what's up, Jordan? What's up, Bulls Nation? Hopefully we'll get on the air sometime before 1 a.m. We'll see how it goes. Really hoping to avoid overtime tonight. We don't need a reprise of that 4-0 game against Atlanta. Yeah, looking forward to seeing this game tonight, to see hopefully if Markkanen can have a bounce back after, you know, his recent slump in the month of March, including that really dreadful 4-of-17 effort earlier this week against the Lakers. Clippers are a team that's fighting for seeding in the Western Conference. They got a lot to play for. Lou Williams is playing really well. He just passed Del Curry for most reserve points all-time NBA above Del Curry. The Clippers, you know, despite moving on from the Blake and DeAndre years, have kind of surprisingly maintained an identity. I think they will never be a true threat in the West until they add a really big star piece. You know, people are talking about maybe Kawhi going there this summer, maybe Jimmy Butler going there this summer. Even without any real stars, They're playing really solid basketball. I mean, speaking of Lou Williams, I'm pretty sure, didn't he have like a 30-point triple-double when we played them a couple months ago? Hopefully the Bulls can hold their own. As you said, it sounds like Zach is going to play, and we can talk about that a little bit. I don't see the purpose of that, but if the kid's healthy and wants to be out there competing, you can't knock him for that.
The crazy thing about the Clippers, too, and we'll get into it in a minute, is, you know, you look at the month of March and the last time we saw the Clippers was they came to the United Center, and that was unfortunately the last game that Chandler Hutchison played in. But they were in a weird situation, right, Matt? Like, they were in this balancing act of, should we try to push for the playoffs? Should we move and try to push ourselves into a better position for the lottery? Like, what are we doing here? And then all of a sudden they went on the crazy streak and traded everybody, but still we're hot enough to now contend for a playoff spot. But now in the month of March, they've been on fire, Matt. 5-1 record. They're averaging 119.8 points per game. That's third in the NBA in the month of March. They're shooting 48% from the field, which is seventh best in the NBA. They're shooting 44.8% from three, which is first in the NBA in the month of March. First. So the Bulls are going to have a lot of problems tonight, I think, from there. Their offensive rating is 116.3, which is also first in the NBA in March. 108.9 defensive rating, which is 14th, and a net rating of 7.4, which is third. So to say that the Clippers have been one of the best teams in March is an understatement, because they have been red hot. So even with Otto Porter Jr. and Zach LaVine very, very likely to play, this is still going to be a really difficult game for the Bulls to pull off a win against.
Yeah, and you know, this Clippers team, with you know, the way that that Lou's been playing, and I mean, I think as you were saying, nobody really expected them to still be hanging in there when they, you know, when they got rid of not only DeAndre, but when they got rid of you know, trading away Tobias Harris to the Sixers. I think everybody saw that as sort of like a, you know, the Clippers conceding and saying, hey, all right, well, we're gonna try and not necessarily like aggressively tank, but just assume that there's enough competition in the West that we might backslide enough to find ourselves in the lottery, which, you know, would help them in a number of different ways based on the other dealings they have going on and where they have picks and where they are protecting picks. So even still, like, you got to credit them for the way that they've been playing. I think some of that probably is Doc Rivers still just being a coach who refuses to lose and is one of the more competitive guys in this league. The Bulls are going to have their hands full. You know, it's always tough to go west and play these West Coast games, later tip-offs, a long flight out there, and you just hope that, you know, this Bulls team has some semblance of a better defensive effort, because I think that's, you know, as you were saying, it's going to be hard to slow the Clippers down. The Bulls defense has really been struggling in this recent backslide in the month of March, where, you know, they're not getting back in transition. Guys are D'ing up. Guys are having a tough time. Whether, you know, whether they're switching or whether they're trying to stay on their guys, it's like, it just hasn't been pretty. And, I, you know, I think it's been very frustrating for Jim Boylan. Boylan got a little frustrated fielding a question, I think, from 670's Cody Westerlund recently about this team's lack of defensive execution. So that's certainly something that I will be looking for watching this game tonight, is will the Bulls show more effort and do a better job, because I don't see the Bulls outscoring the Clippers unless Markkanen and LaVine both have like a lights out night.
So while we're on the subject of Zach LaVine, let's talk about him for a minute. We went on Tony Gill's podcast on 670 The Score, No Zones Bulls podcast, which we'll get to later in the episode. Want to talk about our experience, because we had a lot of fun with him yesterday, going into the studio and spent the better part of 3 hours with him. But one of our conversations was talking about that news of Zach being ready to play tonight and for the rest of the season, too. So, Matt, we talked about this a few days ago, where it was, should the Bulls shut him down? Should they allow him to come back if he's 100% healthy? Now it sounds like he's ready to play. You know, he even went on SportsCenter late night last night, him and Lauri Markkanen did, and he was even asked at the last question, you know, how's the knee doing? And Zach seems to say, you know, I had a couple days off. It's all good. It's just a little tendonitis. I'm fine. Are you worried at all? Are you worried at all that he's playing? And is this more of something that you're giving criticism to the Bulls for not being conscious of this? Or is this something more of like, hey, Zach LaVine, hey, dude, you know, be a little bit more conscious about this. Do you mind that he's playing, or would you rather see him sit?
I don't love that he's playing. I mean, do I mind? I mean, I think I do mind in just knowing that there is an inherent risk here. That seems to be an unnecessary risk. And if Zach feels that he is 100% healthy and has been deemed to be 100% healthy by this team's training staff and the medical experts, then there's theoretically nothing wrong with him saying, I'm healthy, I've been having a pretty good year, I want to go out there and finish the year strong and keep balling. I you know, and that's essentially what he said when he was talking earlier this week at a practice. He said, that's just not who I am about sitting out. That's not what I do. It's going to be good for the team. We can get our chemistry down, continue to play well, build things for next year. And I don't necessarily disagree with that logic. I just don't think it's as strong as the argument that is, what does Zach LaVine have left to prove? I think that he and Markkanen have developed a decent amount of chemistry this season, certainly much more than they showed in the 12 games that they got to play together last year. The Bulls, meanwhile, are, you know, still trying to fend off Atlanta to stay in that fourth spot in the draft lottery standings. They still, theoretically, could jump Cleveland into the top three. Zach sitting would certainly help in that regard. And what you are risking Zach LaVine re-aggravating this sore patellar tendon, this strained patellar tendon, in games that your team really big picture doesn't want to win. And I get that he's competitive and wants to keep building what's going on right now. Whereas last season, and that's something that I mentioned when we were chatting with Tony for No Zones last night, there wasn't even a notion of, well, we should play him because there's chemistry to worry about building. When they decided to sit not only LaVine, but Dunn down the stretch last season. Last season was such a dumpster fire. There was no chemistry. All the injuries, you know, timeline-wise, just made it impossible to build chemistry. So they weren't losing anything by sitting those guys last year and definitely wanted to be tanking their way and correcting that seven-game win streak that they had. This year it's a little different because they did show some signs of life. And Zach's not wrong to say it would be a good thing to continue this development and this chemistry, but to me, that does not outweigh the risk. Simply does not outweigh the risk.
Yeah, so for anybody that didn't hear what Zach LaVine had to say yesterday when he was asked about not shutting it down, here's what he had to say. This is coming from Casey Johnson. That's just not who I am. That's not what I do. It's going to be good for the team. We can get our chemistry down, continue to play well, build things for next year. He also said this, I'm not somebody that's going to sit out. If I'm hurt, there's no reason to try to risk anything. But if I'm not, I'm going to play. I've already missed enough games, I feel like, for my entire career. I missed a whole year and a half because of that, the ACL tear. So that makes sense. And this is what I was telling you and Tony. Is I can understand it from the Bulls' perspective. Is like if a lot of fans are angry that maybe they're not shutting Zach LaVine down from that perspective, but don't be like if you're a Bulls fan and you're angry at Zach, which I don't think Bulls fans are, and I'm not at all. Like this is respect to Zach. Zach wants to play. This should come as no shock to anybody. So if he wants to play, of course he does. Ballers want a ball. They want to go out there. And this is another step, too, is Zach's trying to take the we mentality, not the me mentality. And another step and another characteristic to becoming a leader of this team. And so that makes sense. It's like, I'm not going to just mail it in because I had four good weeks or I had the best month of my career. And I get it, too. There's the risk of why play in 13 games that are meaningless, you know, when it could jeopardize a year down the line. But if he's 100% healthy, you know, the Bulls still have three back-to-backs left to play. I think the Bulls are going to still sit him for a handful of games coming down the stretch. I don't think there's too much to freak out about. And Jim Boylan also said, too, at practice, look, if there was something seriously wrong, we're going to sit him and we're going to monitor that. So I get it. I understand all of that, but respect to Zach LaVine for saying all of this and you know showing the rest of his team like yo I'm not a dude that's gonna think about myself and all of that. And that's similar sentiments I said on the No Zones podcast too, is like a lot of people thought Zach was a me guy, especially with the money and the contract last year. And man, there's been a lot of stuff this season that has told me that he is not like that. That he is the very opposite of a me guy. He is a we guy. And that makes me excited about Zach LaVine for this future, man.
It's nice to hear that kind of talk from him. And, you know, I think you and I didn't agree from the start when we heard a lot of Bulls fans talking about and labeling Zach LaVine as that kind of personality, because I didn't ever see that. So you know,
agreed.
To see he is a team first guy who wants to go out there and be, you know, play for his teammates, play with his teammates. It's a nice sentiment, and it's nice to get that kind of talk from Zach LaVine, who, you know, we've always talked about and debated, is this guy the face of the franchise right now and moving forward, or is it Markkanen? And, you know, those guys went on SportsCenter last night. It's pretty clear that LaVine is a little bit more camera friendly, or I guess maybe the better way to say it is that Markkanen is a lot more camera shy than Zach LaVine. So you want to have that kind of bravado guy who is not only very confident in himself and his abilities, but also is someone who's concerned about being there for his teammates. it is a good thing to hear those words from Zach LaVine in a situation like this. And for Boylan to back that up based on what Boylan has learned about Zach since these two have started to work together even more closely. To me, as far as the whole, you know, will or will he not play thing, you're probably right. I mean, I would be shocked if the Bulls play LaVine in any of these back-to-play, you know, both games in the back-to-backs, whether they rest him in game one or game two of those back-to-back sets, you know, whatever. But, like, to me, that would be idiotic to play him in those back-to-backs. And I also think if they want to continue to see what LaVine and Markkanen can do together, to also to develop the chemistry of Otto, who is still fairly new and has fit in very well right off the bat, but you still would like to see them get a few games together, that's fine. But maybe also just, like, just, you know, shave off LaVine's minutes a little bit. You know, we saw some of these Bulls starters play like 50 plus games in that quadruple overtime game. They're playing a lot of game, a lot of heavy minutes in general, just because this Bulls bench is so weak right now. So to me, that would be another stipulation that I would want to see. If LaVine and Boylan and everyone within the organization says, yes, we're going to play LaVine down the stretch, even if it might not be necessary to play him, hopefully Boylan at least just, you know, keeps his, like, 30 minutes and you're done. I don't want to see Zach playing close to 40 minutes in any of these games down the stretch of the season, because there's no point to that.
That's fair, and I agree with you on that, too. You know, shave down the minutes a little bit. Let Zach LaVine play, but just be conscious of it, too. And the other thing, too, I was thinking about this, too, Matt, is if they did shut Zach LaVine down for the rest of the season and he was healthy, you think the NBA would sting the Bulls for tanking, like, openly tanking about, like, trying to sit him and doing all of that, even if he was healthy? Because I feel like the NBA would be knocking at the Bulls' door and be like, what are you doing here? Last 13 games of the season, sitting one of your players that's fully healthy? Like, what's going on here? Well, to me, I think the NBA would be knocking at their door.
Well, when there's no injury to speak of, because the Bulls tried that last year where they sat Rolo and Holiday.
Didn't work. And
they called it, you know, we're focusing on evaluating our young talent. And this year, you can't really use that. But, I mean, if Zach does have a knee, if he has a knee issue, then I'm sorry, the league can't say boo about that. Maybe they're right, being overly cautious with a player with a minor injury, but if he is a player who is very important to your future and there is an injury, then to hell with you, NBA. We're not tanking. We're being careful with a very valuable player who does have an injury he's working through.
The only thing I would say is, yeah, like, if, you know, now you see him fully practicing and all of that, but then you shut him down for three or four games in a row or the rest of the season, but at the same time, there is nothing really wrong with him other than some general soreness or some load management, the NBA probably would have some suspicion. But that's not, that's a bigger issue than it needs to be. It was just something I was curious about. But the bigger picture here is, I think the Bulls will still sit him for a handful of games. And same thing with Otto. I think Otto's still going to get a few games off too. He's been dealing with some nagging injuries, and I would imagine that maybe Markkanen even gets a couple games off. So a combination of these guys are all going to see games off. And the Bulls' schedule going down to the last 13 games is still kind of difficult. They're playing a lot of playoff teams or teams that are fighting for playoff position. Like, Matt, going into the last 13 games, you've got the Clippers tonight. You got the Kings on Sunday. You have the Jazz next week. You've got two games against the Raptors. You get the Trailblazers. You've got the two games against the 76ers at the end of the season. And then you've got two games against the Knicks, two games against the Wizards, and then you have the Suns. So you got some tanking teams in there and some bad teams in there, but you also have a lot of teams that are fighting for playoff positioning. So those teams need these wins a lot more than the Bulls do. So I don't think there's a lot to freak out about. And the Bulls saw what they're doing against teams that are getting ready to play playoff games, aka against the Pistons. We saw how that works. So,
yeah.
don't freak out. It's okay. Take a deep breath. We're going to be all right. It's Friday. Everybody take a deep breath. It's going to be okay.
Telling Bulls fans not to freak out is a, from what I have come to know over several years, Jordan, that is wasted breath. Telling Bulls fans to not freak out about anything is wasted breath. Because guess what? If there's one thing Bulls fans do really well, it's freak the hell out.
It's true. I've had my share of freakouts this year, this season alone. So I understand it. I get where they're coming from. But the biggest thing I got out of this was respect to Zach LaVine, man. It's just another thing that I like to hear out of him from the leadership aspect of all of this. So that's what I got out of this more than anything else, was hearing him say those types of things and continue to repeat that. It's so refreshing to hear that, you know? And we haven't had that for a while, and a guy that's been vocal about things like that. So he's backing it up, man. He's backing it up with the money, and the play has been there in February and now leading it into March. So it's really nice to hear that. So we got to take a short break here on Locked On Bulls. When we come back, we're going to wrap up with talking about the two-part article that an interview that Darnell Mayberry from The Athletic did with Jim Boylan. It's kind of interesting that, timely enough, I talked about Jim Boylan's 100 days. The marker of the 100 days happened this week since he took over as head coach, and then Darnell wrote over 5,000 words in a one-on-one interview with Jim Boylan this week, and so that was published over at The Athletic, theathletic.com. So Matt and I are going to hit on the main points. And I asked our listeners out there, has your opinion changed at all about Jim Boylan since he started, or even since the beginning of January? Has your opinion changed at all on him? We want to hear from you, so hit us up, 331-979-1369, or on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Peck. Stay right with us here at Locked On Bulls. Be back in 60 seconds. Back here on Locked On Bulls, hit us up on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, on our text and voicemail line at 331-979-1369. So, Matt, another really great piece by Darnell Mayberry and everything The Athletic is doing all season long covering the Bulls. Shout out to him and Stefan Noe. Do great work over there. John Greenberg as well, who does a bunch of articles all season long covering the Bulls. But another one where, you know, I told Darnell Mayberry this season when he did the Cameron Payne piece too, I even told him that. I'm like, dude, you find a way to pull things out of me that make me think in a different way than I don't normally do. And my opinion has started to change over the last handful of weeks about Boylan, and my opinion has changed and things seeing this team start to develop and grow. But then reading this too, I just start to get a different perspective. So you're reading through all the 5,000 words and the interviews and the questions. What are some of the main points and what are the main things that you pulled from reading through this? Not only the X's and O's that Darnell asked him, but the other side of Jim Boylan, maybe the past and the personal side and what he has learned and what he has grown from this. Maybe start with the X's and O's side and where he has grown from that and what he envisions this Bulls team being. What were some of the main things that caught your eye and caught your attention while reading in this?
Certainly, the talk between Boylan and Darnell about his infatuation with establishing a paint scoring, you know, option, and that for a lot of December and into January, when Boylan really slowed the offense down and kind of, you know, was driving Bulls fans crazy with the slowest pacing of any team in the league, essentially. And it was, oh my God, you know, how many jokes were made about, you know, throwing the ball down to Rolo and letting him go to work. And Boylan talking about how it's not like he is disregarding the importance of the, you know, the 3-point shot in the NBA. He's not an idiot in that sense, but that in order to get the looks he wanted for his shooters, you have to first establish a threat inside, which earlier this season underneath Fred Hoiberg, they really didn't do. So that was one thing to me that as I was reading this, I was saying, all right, you know what? Like, there have been a lot of jokes made at Jim Boylan's expense from this fan base since he took over. Some of them justified just because of some of his, you know, his flowery speech and his trigger words like spirit and toughness and grit and all that. But when it comes to basketball and what he tried to get this team to do when he took over, the logic about establishing that low post scoring threat in order to, yes, it's nice if you can outscore your opponents in the paint every night, which, you know, with the Bulls' defensive struggles is not a given, but he was trying to at least bring his team to a parallel level of paint scoring in order to then open up other things and other opportunities for your scorers, your shooters, your slashers, all of that kind of stuff. And first and foremost, he had to establish the paint scoring. And then you saw things open up. So to me, like, the way that Boylan described why he did things the way he did them, like, finally, like, it made sense to me. And he's like, the other thing that he said specifically was, like, it didn't matter if when we first were working on establishing that paint scoring that it wasn't effective. I was just drilling this into these guys to make them say, we have to get to a point where we can do this and execute this and do it so much so that we do it without mistake. We can do it almost second nature. We know that this is a part of our game plan on a nightly basis, and it's going to open up a whole lot more for us. Once Jim felt like they had gotten a better handle and grasp on that, that is when simultaneously you saw him let out a little bit more slack on the leash and go to a more free multiple ball handler style system with Dunn and LaVine and Markkanen all handling the ball, Otto Porter handling the ball at times, and letting them run a little bit more and letting them get out and play the style that was more what Fred was doing, but with a lot more efficiency scoring in the post than Fred ever had. And a lot of that is credit to Robin Lopez, like a renaissance for that guy and Robin Lopez doing things we never saw him do in a Bulls jersey before.
Yeah, you mentioned that too, and going into the paint, and I think that's just a matter of philosophy, right? And he even mentioned it in the part two that Darnell put out, is talking about the difference in philosophy with him and Fred Hoiberg. He's like, Fred wanted to get up a lot of threes, and whereas Jim Boylan felt like getting to the paint was something that he wanted to do whether or not it was working. And said that was one of the biggest criticisms of this team once he took over, was everything was working around the perimeter and nothing was getting into the paint, which kind of made sense. Is, you know, Zach LaVine was struggling to get to the rim. Chris Dunn was struggling to get to the rim and finish. That makes sense. But at the same time, then a lot of what the Bulls were doing was taking away from getting shots up at the three-point line. But at the same time, how many of the guys on this Bulls team can shoot threes at a decent clip? Not too many, right?
Right.
That was one of our biggest complaints, is at that time, the only dudes that could shoot threes were Zach, which he wasn't really taking all that many. Lauri Markkanen, who had only played at that time when Jim took over, one game against the Rockets. And then you had Antonio Blakeney, who wasn't getting in any games.
Justin Holiday, who was like shooting terribly before they traded him.
Yeah. Yeah, and at that time when Boylan took over, he was shooting at a decent clip, but then, yeah, as soon as Boylan took over, then Justin Holiday went on a terrible three-point shooting streak. And then he had Jabari Parker off the bench, and he was another kind of reliable, not really three-point shooter, and then you didn't have Bobby Portis, but that was your other reliable three-point shooter, but it was ridiculous to ask him to shoot as many threes as you were asking him to shoot. So it's just a difference in philosophy. And I think for a while we were all struggling to figure out why he was doing this, and it was going away from the way the modern NBA was going, and it was like, what are we doing here? And then all of a sudden there was a flip in the switch, and that started when they traded for Otto. And it's like, okay, now the post moves are working because now you have a dude that can spread things out and help Zach and Lowry get to the rim. And the post moves and the paint points are working with Robin. And then things started to open up and the offense started to run freely. I don't know if the philosophy that he has can work long term. And he said next year he wants to pick up the pace more and he wants to continue to emphasize shooting threes. We'll see if he lives up to that. But for right now, it's just differences in philosophies. And I still don't know, and I'm still got a big question mark on whether or not that can hold true in a modern NBA right now, with three-point shooting being one of the most important aspects to winning basketball, right?
Of course. But, you know, and that's the part that when he had talked earlier this season about the team's three-point attempts, Boylan gave kind of an odd answer. I think if I'm remembering correctly, he's like, it should probably be somewhere between 20 and 40 attempts a game. I don't really know. But, I've got a lot of things on my plate. There are a lot of things I'm trying to get the team to do. And I'm confident that our three-point attempts will, we'll continue to work on that. Otto's arrival is certainly going to help. We'll see if they can add a three-point shooting threat at the point guard position in the offseason. But it was just another reminder that, because of his style and mannerism of relating to the media compared to Fred Hoiberg, who was just so robotic, I think Jim was kind of he was an easy face to be the punchline of a joke for a Bulls fan base that was very upset. And when he took over, between the near player mutiny and the ugly basketball that we saw as he was trying to eliminate the mistakes and get a more disciplined group of guys to follow his lead in the early going, the early results were not pleasing to the eye, and it was a lot of losing basketball. So because of that, I think everybody said, this guy doesn't know basketball. This guy doesn't know what he's doing. He's in over his head. You and I on this very podcast said similar things a month or so into Boylan's tenure, and I won't run away from that. I think I was very critical of Boylan when he took over for Fred. You were too. And part of it was Darnell and this long two-part Q&A with Boylan. And part of it was, as I think I mentioned yesterday, I had the opportunity to chat with Jim Boylan at the Bulls charity event I went to earlier this week. And not only was he very gracious with his time, and the dude lent me his ear for a solid half hour. Big Dave and I sat there and chatted with Jim Boylan about a lot of different stuff from this Bulls season, and he couldn't have been nicer. But there's a piece from Darnell Part one that I want to read, because I think it is very beautifully written and very accurate, and it is exactly how I felt walking away from my conversation with Jim Boylan. Behind the coach speak lies a beautiful basketball mind, one that's been dedicated to and groomed for this game, this moment, for more than three decades. What becomes abundantly clear after only 5 minutes talking ball with Boylan is that he is so much more than machismo. You can disagree with his methods, you can debate his strategies, but you cannot deny he knows what he's doing. Step into his world and you'll find yourself humbled, quickly reminded that he has likely forgotten more of the game than you will ever know. To me, that was just so eloquently put and simply stated to say, Bulls fans are cracking jokes at Boylan left and right because of the spirit and the grit and the toughness talk. But this guy, there's a reason that he is the head coach of an NBA team. There's a reason that some of basketball's best minds, Tom Janovich, Izzo, Greg Popovich, have nothing but glowing remarks to say about this guy. I still have my doubts about whether he's the right person to lead this rebuild back to actual contention. But for the job of cracking the whip a little bit and getting this young team to eliminate some of their mistakes and do some of the things the proper way and teach them the proper way to go about things, coupled with the fact that he actually knows a hell of a lot about the game of basketball, I think we were too quick to judge.
I would agree with that. And I would say the same thing about a lot of other, I would say that same thing about a lot of other coaches too that get harsh criticism. And I think he was put in a difficult position. And look, he didn't help himself out either in that first couple of weeks, And he would say he's the first one that he made mistakes. And although he said he wouldn't go back and change any of the things that he did, and I can respect that he wouldn't go back and he has no regrets about any of the things that he did. That's just part of the learning process. It came at a tough time, right? The Bulls were in a terrible position, and a lot of people felt that the Bulls making the change when they did wasn't fair to Fred Hoiberg. And while people were quick and angry, and I don't think it was really anger at Fred Hoiberg or Jim Boylan, it was more the anger was at the front office and the ownership and about the direction of where the rebuild was going. And I think the focus of that anger ended up going towards Jim Boylan, right? Or towards Fred Hoiberg. So I think he caught a lot of that anger, and I'm guilty of it too. I think I'm guilty of some of that too, and some of that anger, some of that focused anger from where the rebuild and the direction of this was going. It was being taken out on him. And look, some of that is deserved and some of it was fair for the things that were said in press conferences and the way that the player mutiny was handled and all of that. But now we're 3 months past that. I think he's a different coach, and he's learned from that now sitting here in the middle of March. The question is, and I was telling Bulls fans this when I was kind of going over and asking that same question and hoping that people would leave us their texts, their tweets, and their voicemails saying, do you have a different opinion on who he is as a coach and what he's been doing now than you did maybe 2 or 3 months ago? And I said, it's okay to have a different opinion now of him than you did back then. And it's also okay to still question whether or not you think he's the right fit for the future of this team. I said, that's okay to still wonder and be questioning whether or not he's the right guy. I still think that's all right to still think all of that and still at the same time still feel like he's grown and still feel like maybe you were wrong about a few things, because I think I certainly was. But I did like that quote too. And I think that goes for a lot of NBA coaches though, right? Is that most of these guys know more about will forget more about basketball than we'll ever know about it, right? Same thing with Fred Hoiberg, same thing with any dude that's walked into that building and coached this team. A couple other things that I had, Matt, too. He was talking about the way that the Bulls guard, and especially on the three-point line. Darnell had asked him about one question that said, many fans see the team often going under on screens and bemoan the strategy, but it's one you've said is a pretty standard part of your game plan. Can you explain the choice to use that concept with so many teams looking to shoot threes? He said, yes, the fans have to understand there's a difference between a catch and shoot three and an off the dribble three. There's a difference between an arc catch and shoot three and off the dribble arc three. So we feel, especially with certain personnel, that an off-the-dribble arc three is a low-percentage shot for the offense. We also feel we want to keep people in front of us and not give them the slot line or middle drives. That's an interesting one, because I was looking at the stats, and since Jim Boylan's taken over, I was curious, are teams taking advantage of that, that the Bulls are going under screen, so are guys tending to pull up? And are defenses and teams adjusting to that? And are they starting to pull up on the Bulls and taking more pull-up threes? And it's actually happening. The Bulls' opponents are shooting the second most pull-up threes against the Bulls per game in the entire NBA. The only team that's having opponents shoot more against them is the Warriors. Opponents are averaging 10.1 three-point attempts, pull-up three-point attempts per game against the Bulls. And they're shooting 34.9% against the Bulls. Defenses are noticing that, and they're willing to start shooting more of those. So
I'm glad that Darnell touched on it, because I think that earlier this season, when things were not going well for Boylan, that was one, you know, particular X's and O's decision that I had an issue with, and I think a lot of Bulls fans did when you go back and watch some of those games or think about him. In particular, the one that I really vividly remember is when the Bulls played Denver, and Jamal Murray just killed the Bulls from behind the three-point line while Boylan was instructing his guys to go underneath screens. And Boylan said something after the game about, like, he like made like a Steph Curry comparison, and he was like, hey, you know, like, credit to Jamal Murray, like, the guy was shooting the lights out of, you know, the place tonight. He looked like Steph Curry out there. And it was like, Jamal Murray is a great scorer and the guy could shoot, so why were you telling all of your guys to go underneath screens and let him take those shots all night? It seems like, even for the layperson observing, that was not a good decision, and it came back to bite you. Because he said, well, it kind of worked for us in the first half, and then it didn't work for us in the second half. So when it comes to the ways that Boylan is trying to get his team to defend better in that element of the game as a defensive unit, I think we've seen some progress. And really, the sore reality right now is that there are just not a lot of talented players for the Bulls on the defensive side of the ball. Wendell going down really hurt this team. And as limited as he might be on the defensive end, we already saw some really promising signs from Chandler Hutchison on the defensive end. And there, you know, there's just like Zach LaVine credit for trying harder and showing some signs of improvement. You can say the same for Lauri Markkanen, but really and truly, there's not a whole lot of defensive talent on this roster. So Boylan's doing what he can. Fred did what he can. And I think that Bulls fans are you know, really critical of this, because when Boylan took over for Fred, everybody said, all right, well, like, Boylan was the defensive guru who was whispering in Fred's ear, because Fred was never really a great defensive schematics basketball coach. He's more of an offensive guy. And some of the first things that we saw Jim Boylan change were not on the defensive side, but the offensive side. And I think that kind of threw Bulls fans for a loop, because it's not what they were expecting.
The other thing I would mention, too, it's because I was talking about this, the difference between pull-ups and between catch-and-shoots. The Bulls are, their opponents are averaging 22.2 three-point attempts on catch-and-shoots. Those opponents are shooting 38.4% in the 44 games that Jim Boylan has coached. That's fourth best for opponents in the entire NBA this season. But like, it goes back to what you were saying. How many talented defensive players does this Bulls team actually have? So we got to be mindful of that too. So, and it might sound like, in for anybody listening out there, it might sound like we're giving a lot of excuses, but no, this is just really reality, right? Even if Fred Hoiberg was the coach here, you would see a lot of the similarities here too. A lot of teams would be chucking and gunning a lot of threes, and it would be similar to teams are shooting at a high rate and having a high rate of success against the Bulls at the perimeter. And that's been something that the Bulls have had to deal with all season long, is how do you stop teams shooting threes, and how do you stop teams from doing that all season long? And when the Bulls have been good at that and teams have had off nights, you've seen the Bulls have been able to kill teams. And that's another factor too, is they dominate in the paints. Teams have off nights from the perimeter. Then all of a sudden you see the Bulls are blowing teams out, right? Winning by 15 or 20. So, but when teams end up catching up to you, they're catching up to you because they're knocking down threes at nearly double the rate the Bulls are knocking down threes. So, that's something I'd like to see the Bulls clean up this summer and be able to be a better perimeter guarding team. Matt, let's talk a little bit, though, about the other side of this. More so where Jim Boylan gets some of his coaching strategies and just who Jim Boylan is and how he just developed. You know, we made jokes about him going to his resume and guilty of all of that, and the jokes that we've made in December and January. And, you know, that was something that kind of made me angry. It was like every time I felt like Jim Boylan was bringing up the Greg Popovich stuff and always talking about his resume. But now that I've kind of got a better understanding of what he was learning from all of these different places and all these different stops that he made, which one did you feel like was most important to learning about who maybe he aligns more so the most with?
Yeah, to me, the one that I found most interesting and encouraging as a Bulls fan was Boylan talking about Tom Izzo and how Izzo, more so than any other coach he's ever worked with, is exceptional at working with and coaching and encouraging and teaching individuals as part of a team. Saying like he's the way that Tom Izzo can relate to and instruct and guide players based on their skill sets, based on their strengths and weaknesses. Izzo is so good at communicating what he needs to each player as an individual, to get the best out of them. And looking at where the Bulls are now and what Lauri Markkanen needs to do to take the next step to become a superstar in this league, looking at what Zach LaVine needs to do to continue to improve his game and hopefully make some improvements on the defensive side and continue to increase his basketball IQ and his decision-making late in games, which is something that we've talked about all season long. Talking about Wendell Carter Jr. and what he needs to do in his second season to develop his game. There are a lot of pieces of young, promising individual talent on this Bulls team that need shaping and forming and filling out their games at the NBA level. And so if Boylan is able to take and borrow some of the things he learned from Izzo about how to not only coach a group of young men, but really find a way to relate and communicate with them as individuals, that is something that this young team needs right now Because in order for the chemistry to continue to build, the players all need to be very self-aware of what they do well, what they need to rely on their teammates to do. And, you know, they are at point B. How do you get to point C? That's something I didn't necessarily hear before about Tom Izzo. So I like the fact that Jim said that, and I'm hoping that, Boylan can borrow some of that from Izzo, because the young promising talent, as individuals, they all have things that they need to work on. And if Boylan is, in fact, coming back next season, that's something that through the offseason and into training camp, we can see signs of Boylan being that kind of coach with these young players.
The thing that I liked a lot was what he said about Judd Heathcote. And he said that if you can give a guy something that makes him better, and if you can tell him the truth about something in his game that he improves will help him succeed, you've got him for life. And that stuck with me. I think that's where some of the directness and honesty comes from, and was, I'm going to tell you directly and honestly what I think you need to do to become who you can be, who you can become. And when you do that, a guy figures out, man, he was right and it was good for me. You've got him for life. You can coach him any way you want from there. And he did that. Matt, I think that aligns a lot with what maybe he's done with Zach LaVine, right? Think back to the middle to end of January when Zach LaVine was very, very frustrated and speaking out to the media saying we weren't getting blown out by this many points, and specifically back to that Hawks loss. And we don't know all the ins and outs of what was going on day to day between those two, but Boylan even said specifically that him and Zach would spend hours together in the film room one-on-one going through things and just trying to pick his brain and saying, what are you seeing here and what are you doing here? But that example, and then all of a sudden seeing this explosion from Zach LaVine in the month of February and having the best month of his career. Now all of a sudden Zach LaVine buying into everything that's going on with this Bulls team. Maybe Zach is realizing, shit, maybe he was right. Maybe the things that he was criticizing me about, and maybe he was just being honest about what I needed to do, and maybe I just needed to buy in. Same thing goes as of recently. You know, those criticisms that he gave of Markkanen's defense just a couple days ago. He flat out said that to the media, and there was some people saying, like, really, did you need to say that to the media? Is Markkanen going to be okay with that? Maybe Markkanen improves on that in the last 13 games of the season, or maybe goes into next season and we see a completely different improvement on that. Maybe Markkanen realizes that, does those improvements, and bang, that happens. And then he goes, oh wow, like, that actually happened. I can trust him to actually help me and develop my game. So I liked to hear that. That was something really good. And also, too, he had just asked, Darnell had asked if there was anything from current NBA coaches that you study in steel. Terry Stotts made a lot of sense, just thinking about all the bigs that Terry Stotts has had up in Portland just of recently. You know, Zach Collins and Yusuf Nurkic makes a lot of sense with Carter and Markkanen here. Brad Stevens, too, with the Celtics defensively, and then also Rick Carlisle with Dirk Nowitzki in Dallas. So it's good to hear those types of coaches match up with the types of players that they have and the types of young players that the Bulls have here. So those are good things to hear, too.
Yeah, and you know, one of multiple votes of confidence in Jim Boylan from other coaches around the league, and that's, you know, something that I think was wise of Darnell to put in there. And it's not just asking Boylan about his influences and which coaches he has learned the most from or enjoyed working with over the course of his long career, but to get, you know, it's a collection of coaches who, you know, gave a soundbite about Boylan as the Bulls and, you know, that coach's team were preparing for a game or following a game over the course of this season. And it's another reminder that for the Bulls fans out there who think, what the hell are the Bulls doing with this Jim Boylan character who, you know, failed at Utah? And you know, I guess the thing that everyone harps on with him being obsessed with his resume and in the early days was like, yo, dude, stop talking about Greg Popovich. You're not Greg Popovich. Even essentially, we heard word that his players, Bulls players, were like, all right, well, this dude keeps talking to us about Pop, but like, he's not Pop. So what the hell are we doing?
Right.
But to have other head coaches around the league speak so highly of him and talk about some of his pedigree and how well he knows the game and has so long been a student of the game, and is now turning around and teaching what he knows to this young Bulls team with, you know, a heavy dose of discipline. You know, I don't take those words from those coaches lightly. I think that people in this league very much do respect Jim Boylan. And again, I am in no way endorsing Jim as the right coach for the long haul, and the misconception that he was given an extension when they announced his raise earlier this year. There is still no extension. He is under contract for next season, and it sounds like, based on what John Paxson has said, what Reinsdorf has said, and then even like Woj did a little blip on this for ESPN earlier this week, according to Woj, it sounds like Boylan will be back next season. Maybe another season of Jim Boylan cracking the whip is what this team needs. I don't know if he has what it takes to get them over the hump and lead them into championship contention if this roster is talented enough to do so. But in the meantime, I think it was good of Darnell to do a piece like this because it gives a handful of credibility back to a guy who was robbed of all credibility as soon as he took the job from a very snarky fan base.
And look, I was as pissed as anybody about that. You know, the right practices and the push-ups and the wind sprints and the subbing out your rotations twice and embarrassing them at home, and then the mutiny and all of that. And still, I still find it very bizarre that the grit and the toughness and all of that, and I still don't get any of that. It's good to give him credit and at least open your mind to see some of the other stuff about Boylan. And I agree with you too. I'm not endorsing him as the head coach. I still think that the Bulls should take a long look and do a coaching search. And like, you can still include Jim Boylan in that coaching search.
Right.
And see what else you have out there.
Yeah. And like, I would agree. I want them to do a wide ranging coaching search, and you can evaluate your options and have Jim Boylan as one of those options. But I think they'd be doing themselves a disservice if they didn't see who else was available.
Agreed.
And
the reality is, I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, I would be pleasantly surprised if they did. But the, you know, and just kind of as a final thought with Jim and the perception that he has gotten since taking Fred's job with this fan base, and it was part of our conversation on Wednesday night, and again, could not have been nicer. You know, I just walked up to him, introduced myself, and shook my hand and said, "Hey, great to meet you," and we ended up just talking Bulls basketball for like a solid half hour. He was such a nice guy. The thing that he said to me that I respected was, look, when we play like crap, I want the media to tell everyone that we play like crap. You know, fair is fair. But something that he has been, I think, from what I could glean from our conversation, a little weighed down and frustrated by is the immediacy in which certain members of the media, parentheses Cowley, and a large portion of the fan base is so quick to say guilty before innocent. And it is the, you know, the apathy and the cynicism of this fan base that, again, a large part of that is no fault to Jim Boylan's, but his bosses. Most of this fan base's cynicism right now belongs to the people above Jim Boylan, not Jim Boylan himself. And, you know, we didn't talk specifically about whether or not he acknowledges that. But what we did talk about, and I kind of, on behalf of the fan base, apologized. Like, look, there were some, you know, some mean things said about you, a lot of jokes made at your expense. And I told him straight up, I said, I'm not absolving myself. I've made jokes at your expense on my podcast and on my TV show. And that is part of the territory of new person coming into new job who is coming into a tough job, yes, but all of a sudden is giving, you know, ripe for comedy. Like, and Boylan admitted it as much. He said, you know, of course, I get it. I get that there are easy jokes to be made. But he said he just wants fair. He just wants fairness when it comes to media and this fan base evaluating what's happened this season. And I told him, I said, it was a rocky start for you, but you can't deny some of the positive signs. I've been very encouraged by some of the positive signs of this young, talented roster we have. And I think that the, you know, the BS you had to put up with from the fan base, myself included, was probably not fair. And I tried to explain to him the best I could that it's just how this fan base feels right now. And what Boylan said to me that I also really appreciated was he knows that that kind of attention, and even if it's negative attention, is rooted in a fan base that is so wildly passionate about their team, and Jim Boylan loves that. And I really appreciate that about him.
That's good to hear. And you know what? That's important too, what you just said, is it's not just Bulls fans in general. Like, I am just as guilty as every other Bulls fan out there. Like, I've made the jokes, I've hammered down on the criticism, and most of the criticism, I feel like, and I'm willing to back it up, is deserved. But now, where the Bulls have improved, especially over the last few weeks and even the last month, over a month or so, I've said, I think there's been a turning point where he deserves some of the credit, along with a lot of the players in their improvement too. So, not only do the players deserve a lot of the credit, fair is fair, and that's what you and I do here. We're fair, we're critical when it's deserved, fairness when it's deserved as well. And that's exactly what we're doing here. So I agree with that. And that's a good thing to hear too, is he understands it. He gets it. He's been around all of this in college and in the pros for over 30 years. He gets it. He does. And he'd rather have people be super critical than just not give a shit at all, right? There's small market teams that don't even show up and don't give a shit at all. Even if you're one of the best teams in the NBA, some of those teams don't even care. So I think he would rather teams be super critical and have a passionate fan base that does care so much and be super critical at times when things aren't going well. Because he knows if things do start to go really well and they start to win, that the fan base will be really happy and that it will turn. There's two sides to the coin here. So I will say this again, like I said on Wednesday. Has your opinion changed at all? Bulls fans listening to this, use the weekend to kind of evaluate that. Sit back, read this article if you can. Go to The Athletic, theathletic.com. Read both parts. Think about where your opinion was 2 months ago. Evaluate all of this, how you're feeling, maybe if your opinion's changed. And it doesn't mean just because your opinion changed means that you think that Chip Boylan can be the future of the Bulls head coaching position. But so your feelings and opinions changed. How do you feel now? We'd love to hear from you. 331-979-1369. Hit us up on Twitter as well, at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Peck. Matt, with the last couple of minutes here, just wanted to say again, we went on Tony Gill's No Zones podcast last night. He was very nice of him to let us come into the 670 studios last night and just show us around. And also, we spent the better part of 3 hours in there just recording the show and just having a good chat with Tony about a bunch of different things. I had a lot of fun, but also wanted to mention too, him and Julie DeCaro are working on a new podcast, a crime-driven podcast about Michael Jordan and the 25-year anniversary since his father was tragically murdered. And so they're going back and doing an investigative podcast on that. It is absolutely phenomenal. And I highly suggest you guys go and subscribe to that. Again, it was absolutely phenomenal. Our conversation with Tony Gill on the No Zones podcast will be out later today was great. And once again, Tony Gill putting out fantastic content all season long. So hit him up, give him a follow on Twitter at TonyGill670. Yeah, Matt, I thought our conversation with him was fantastic last night.
It was great, man. It was really fun. It's always fun to do those crossover episodes with other people in the Bulls podcast family. I know you had Tony on our show a couple weeks back when I was out of town, and so you did a one-on-one with him, and I really enjoyed that, so I was very much looking forward to this when he invited us to come to 670 and do his No Zone show. And he, you know, he's still fairly new with this Bulls podcast. He's been doing it for, you know, a few months now, I want to say, and you know, it was really fun. Like, you know, he was picking our brains about what we've been through with the Locked On Network and building this show. And sort of the transition that we went through taking over for Cody and Sean. You know, of course, he knows Cody really well because they worked together at 670. And I think, you know, Tony is in that challenging spot of doing a solo show, which is so challenging. Even just a handful of times that I've done it, and I know you've done it, doing a solo episode on our show when one of us is unavailable. And he's already brought in a number of great guests before he invited us on, so that helps. But, you know, I offered all the encouragement I could when we were chatting with him yesterday, because doing a solo podcast is not easy. And he's doing a great job with it so far.
Again, Behind the Headlines is the podcast if you're interested in the true crime, and if along with the No Zones podcast as well, our episode will be out later today. So thanks again to Tony. And Tony was on the jump too late last week, you know, after that 76ers game. So Tony's been bouncing around all over the place this year covering the Bulls. And like you said, it is difficult doing a solo show. I did one earlier this week. Shout out to him, and thank you again for letting us come on the show. I think that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Hit us up. Again, Jim Boylan Conversation. Anything you got from this weekend? Bulls are on the West Coast. You have the Clippers tonight and the Kings on Sunday. Maybe get a little revenge game. Maybe the Bulls can laugh the Kings off the floor like they did to the Bulls in December. Maybe get a little revenge game like they did to the Celtics. Whatever you got for us, though, hit us up, 331-979-1369. We'd love to hear from you. Text, voicemails, whenever you're listening to the show, wherever you're listening to the show. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Hit us up on Twitter, at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls_Peck. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful weekend. We'll be back on Monday with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com